On the morning of November 17, 1558, England entered a new and uncertain age. Queen Mary I had died at St. James's Palace after a reign marked by religious conflict, diplomatic disappointment, and personal sorrow. Her death was not unexpected. For months, her health had deteriorated, and the absence of an heir had made the question of succession unavoidable. Yet when the news spread through London and across the kingdom, the transition carried an emotional force that went far beyond the replacement of one monarch by another. England was exhausted by division. It had experienced repeated changes in religious policy, costly political tensions, and the humiliating loss of Calais, the last major English possession in France. Many people longed for stability, but no one could be certain what the new queen would bring. The woman who inherited the throne was 25-year-old Elizabeth Tudor, the daughter of Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. Her path to the crown had been perilous from the beginning. She had been born on September 7, 1533, at Greenwich Palace, amid enormous expectations. Henry VIII had broken with Rome, challenged papal authority, and overturned the established religious order partly because he wanted a legitimate male heir. Anne Boleyn's pregnancy had therefore been watched closely by the court and by foreign ambassadors. When the child proved to be a girl, the disappointment was unmistakable. Elizabeth was healthy, intelligent, and royal by birth, but she was not the son her father had demanded. Less than 3 years later, Anne Boleyn was executed on charges of adultery, incest, and treason. The accusations remain controversial, and many historians regard them as politically motivated or exaggerated. For the young Elizabeth, however, the immediate consequence was clear. Her mother was dead, her parents' marriage was declared invalid, and her own legitimacy was cast into doubt. The child who had once been celebrated as a princess became, in the language of the court, Lady Elizabeth. She was removed from the direct center of royal life and forced to grow up in a world where affection, status, and survival could never be taken for granted. Elizabeth's childhood shaped the ruler she would become. She received an exceptional education under tutors such as William Grindal and Roger Ascham. She studied Latin, Greek, French, Italian, and theology, and she developed a disciplined command of rhetoric. She could speak carefully, write elegantly, and conceal more than she revealed. Her intelligence was not merely academic. From an early age, she learned to read the atmosphere of a room, to recognize danger, and to avoid commitments that might trap her. These qualities would become central to her political style. Elizabeth rarely rushed when delay could serve her interests. She listened, observed, and allowed others to reveal their intentions before she disclosed her own. The death of Henry VIII in 1547 brought Elizabeth's younger half-brother, Edward VI, to the throne. Edward was the long-awaited male heir, the son of Jane Seymour, Henry's third wife. Because Edward was only 9 years old, power rested largely with adult advisors who promoted Protestant reform. During these years, England moved further away from Catholic doctrine and worship. The Book of Common Prayer was introduced, religious images were removed from many churches, and the authority of the English crown over the national church was strengthened. Elizabeth, who had been educated in a Protestant environment, adapted to the new order. Yet she also understood that religion could be dangerous when treated carelessly. Faith was personal, but religious policy was inseparable from power. Elizabeth's life became especially precarious after Edward VI's death in 1553. The young king's advisors attempted to prevent the accession of his Catholic half-sister, Mary Tudor, by supporting Lady Jane Grey. The scheme collapsed within days. Mary secured widespread backing and entered London in triumph. At first, Elizabeth publicly supported her sister.